Hello, and welcome to Sheree Lindberg's Elevated Life Academy, Stories of Hope and Healing. Through raw and heartfelt conversations, we uncover the powerful tools and strategies these individuals use to not only heal themselves, but also inspire those around them. Join us on this incredible journey as we discover the human spirit's remarkable capacity to heal, find hope in the darkest of moments, and ultimately live an elevated life.
Welcome to another episode of Elevated Life Academy, and I am your host, Sheree Lindberg, and we are going to have a exciting and well-rounded conversation on brain spotting in the schools and hope and how they have interweaved themselves and some wonderful ideas that are going to be moving forward, we all hope, for the community and for schools. And so my guests today are Katrina and Steven. And I'm going to let them introduce themselves. And I'm going to ask you to start, Stephen, and then we'll have Katrina. And then she can also share the authentic story of how the two of you met and how you've been building from hope and from brain spotting in the school. So welcome, both of our guests today.
Well, thanks for having us. It's a joy to be here and really important that we are talking about this work. My name's Steve Ripa. My students call me Dr. Ripa. I've been a teacher all my life. I've been a principal. I've been a university administrator. And what I've spent the last 25 years doing is working with my students and staff around the country, growing and measuring hope. And as I've been doing this work, it's always been important. But even in the last 5 years, it's accelerated in its importance. And I had the opportunity to meet Katrina and you a while back. And it really helped solidify our work and take it to a whole nother level. And I'm excited to talk about that today.
Yes, thank you. And Katrina, please introduce yourself.
Thanks, Sheree. I am very happy to be talking about all things for the recipe, the alchemy of brain spotting in schools. It's transformative, and I think we have everywhere to go to start to have people learn about brain spotting in schools and support them, because I really think it's the answer. I've been an innovative pioneer, and it started with therapeutic recreation and then an LCSW, of working at Polytrauma in the VAs, working on the East Coast, and then moving back into rural Wisconsin, where my roots are. And what I learned about our rural access to care is that there's a lot of gaps. So over the last 8 years, I'm a regional trainer for Sources of Strength, and I've written almost $2 million of awarded grant funds for school-based mental health with about 15 schools in our area. What I've found is very few people could articulate their definition or their day-to-day practices of what is hope. And about 3 years ago, Stephen and I were connected by a mutual colleague. And right away, we were so excited that what? You do this and you do this? I've been searching for this for 30 years.
That's right.
And the reason we're so excited is it's like the missing piece of hope and being able to honor the voice of youth in any age, but most specifically, honor the voice or the curiosity of youth in a safe, supported environment. And then you start to see and hear all these stories come up about, I've always wanted to do that. This was the best day of my school life. What can we do next? And here we are, wondering, what do we do with this now?
So beautiful. And when I'm listening to the two of you, I just think about, you know, when you talk about honoring their voices, like they are our future. And so we, not just because of our hearts, but also I feel we have, if we take this really seriously, we have an obligation. They are our future. They are going to be bringing their creative minds. They're the ones that are going to be solving things. They're the ones that are going to be able to look at it with a different lens. And so when we can hold that creative space and bring in hope, help them blossom so that they can bring their gifts, forward. So I just want to, you had written to me and shared a couple of things. I just want to make sure I read this and then we'll invite you both to share from your perspective. So the perception out there is that everything is okay in the schools. However, 40% of youth and adults are represented on the website as if all is good. But looking at the test scores and the teams, what would you share about that, Katrina?
Well, I'm going to invite Stephen to introduce that, and I'll chime in.
Yeah, okay. Sure. Because we've been researching this for 25 years and really going significantly into this work. And I want to first begin by saying two things. One is that our schools are doing the best they can. They really are. There's amazing heroes out there working it and putting in that extra effort. It's really the system isn't complete. We're using an old modeled system and we have all this new approach and technologies, and our teachers and our administrators, they don't have the ability to do this for a variety of reasons within their system. So I want to begin with that. And then I also want to say I'm representing a collective of amazing people like Brandon, Jim, Peter, and Janisha, and I could go on and on. So I'm the voice. It's really our collective work with Katrina that I'm speaking. So what we found is that schools, it's like thirds. There's a third that loves school. It really works for them. They figured it out. They know that what the teacher is doing and what the test wants is they know how to get to that. And so they're happy. And then there's another third that school is confusing. It's not what they hoped it to be. There's a rub and they're compromised almost all the time. That group learns how to deal with the compromise and swallow it like a bitter pill. And then there's a third that absolutely, it's just awful. And when you ask people as adults, they talk about how school was awful. You talk about people who committed to playing musical instruments in band, and the day it stopped was the day they stopped playing, right? Mm-hmm. And so one of the things about it as researchers, and there's plenty of research you can cite to see how engagement drops around middle school, and stays low all the way to adulthood, all the way to adulthood, right? And so what happens as schools, and you know, I was an administrator, I get it. You need to create a positive culture. So what we do is we take that 40% and we make it seem like it's everyone, when in reality it's not. And because resources are limited, we end up doing this thing where we are supporting that 40% pretty fully, and then the support dramatically goes down for everybody else, right? And so what happens is that there's a real need to create joy and hope in all the kids and the staff, because what's affecting the students affects the staff or vice versa, right? And so really what we're doing in our hope work is we help people be able to find and own their voice, which most of us think we do, but when we really practice and look at it, and then really help people to understand that goals are something they own and they need to create, right? And just as a point, the whole idea of SMART goals, mm-hmm. I get it. I'm an administrator. I get it, SMART goals. But if you don't own those goals or believe in those goals, that's evil. Now you've got a rub that even went deeper, because you don't believe in the goal, and now you've got a systematic way that you have to do it. So I just invite people to think about that and the safety that's jeopardized by not having voice. So what we've been doing is working with kids and adults to understand what these elements look like, but you have to embed it with experiences so they practice it. That's the key. Social-emotional learning isn't about a verbal thing where you stand and you say, this is how it works and this is what you need, or maybe having a circle and then you talk about it, which would be better. But what you need to do is develop experiences. And this is why I ran the Center for Experiential Learning at the University of Minnesota. We learn to design experiences that accelerate certain topics, right? And it's brilliant, whether it's a mental health issue or an educational target, right? A standard. And what I want to say is that it's that combination of experiential learning, practice, and reflection is what brought me to work with Katrina and then see the gateway of brain spotting, because as we work on it, this students and staff really enjoy this. And that's the important thing, is now we help people understand you have a voice. Let's strengthen it, right? You have ideas. What are those? Let's include those into your goals or our overall goals. And how can we create a pathway so when you fall down or it gets foggy and you're lost, you have the tenacity or the ability to keep going forward? Now, the crux move here is along the way, what we discovered is there are students and staff that really need to tell their story. It's like a cathartic release, if you will. And they need that ability to have a safe zone in the right environment where people can say, what do you think? What do you love about school? What do you struggle with? What are some challenges you've had? And then when I experienced the brain spotting and I did the level one training and my neurons in my brain just went crazy. If you want a neurological explosion, try this brain spotting, right? And what's interesting about it for me, and now I'll just take it off, is that so we grow hope. We do it nationally. We do it with schools. We do it staff and students. It's really cool. But then what we realized is there's a tipping point that you get people to grow and own their hope. And then when they get to a certain point, it seems like it's activated, right? And for some of our folks, they really need what Katrina brings to this table, which is being able to talk about their experience, what it mattered to them, without anyone else adding their input or perspective, and letting that holding space for what is important to them.
Beautiful. Wow. Really well said. Katrina, what would you like to add to that?
Again, complimenting schools for all of the gaps that they try to overcome and the amazing hearts and efforts from communities to help schools. And here's where I'd like to shine a light of opportunity for innovation. For example, in my county, in Crawford County, Wisconsin, I'm officially the one therapist in this northern part of this county. In the southern part, there might be four others. And we have a 67% poverty rate, which is reduced school lunches. It's a measurement that we get. I know there's substance abuse issues, there's rural access to care issues. And the old school way that I want to shed a light on that, I want to just say, no, we can do better and be innovative, is schools would maybe help or call a parent to get them referred into mental health systems. And the basic talk therapy kind of stuff isn't our answer. Instead, what is the answer is this somatic approach and the youth voice. And here's what I've learned. So much of seeing kids who are school-aged, and I go into three different school districts providing independent therapy, most of their issues were coming from issues that they were dealing with conflict at school, either not feeling like they belonged, difficulty concentrating with or meshing or connecting with certain teachers. Even just walking into the school building in the morning felt like they're going into more of a battle zone than a place where they can authentically express themselves and ask questions. So there's this competitiveness or this view of what do you not have? So no longer can we just see the access to care as helping someone, because we knew during COVID that access to care was held together with duct tape. It was severely cracked. So people fell out of seeing their counselor. People needed to try to find new counselors. People were lost in that time. And what I hope is that superintendents, administrators, teachers think of this isn't a budgetary thing, because we can do more good with somatic work like brain spotting in schools with classroom teachers and administrators and your pupil services being able to be that reflective energy for the kid and not just referring them to talk therapy. So I want both. I want the school people to have further exposure of innovative and not just open the box, kind of what fits in our budget and what maybe is being offered by DHS or CSIS, but to have it be innovative with a somatic approach. And I see that that works.
Yeah, I'm really thinking about what you're saying and the need for innovation. We can't keep doing the same things and expecting different results. We've got to change it up and do something different. And I love partnering with both of you, because back in the day when I was going to grad school, my background actually is in school counseling. But when I went in there and I was trying to make an impact, there was such an influx of students that I was one person and there was like 700 students. Like, it's really hard to make an impact. But I love the idea of what you're talking about, is to teach everyone so that it's a culture. Like, everyone has this information. And so everyone can support the innovation and the change. It takes time, but we keep encouraging, we keep supporting it. So I really love what you're saying. So talk to me a little bit more about taking this work and integrating it into the personal learning plans that you've talked about, Stephen, and how that might look.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for the question. A part of our research is that we go around the country and a few other countries around the world. And what we do is because lots of people love personal learning plans. It's a requirement, right, in the state. And so people have them. And then for adults, they have professional growth plans, right? And what we found is when we go over and we talk with students and staff over the span of 25 years, what we found is everyone would say, yes, we have a personal learning plan. And across the board, they would quietly say, people aren't really engaged in it. It's an assignment, right? So what happened is this beautiful concept of what's important to you, where do you want to go, what do you need, those kinds of things have given way to things like state standards and how are you doing and how can we get you to even be better with your test scores. That's what it's become, right? And when I was a principal, my first day, the retired principal said to me, oh, and by the way, at the start of the year, you do personal growth plans or PLPs with your staff. You ask them what they think and what they want to do. Then you take it and then you put it in this drawer right here. You close the door. You don't even open it up until the end of the year. And then take it back out and give it to them. And I looked at him with shock. I was like, oh my God, it's not a living, breathing document that you're doing. And no wonder the kids don't feel it that way. And so what I'm trying to say is, we have personal learning plans. They don't do what our head and hearts and mission vision really want it to do. But once we infuse it with hope and a sense of self-directed learning and leading, what ends up happening is it flips. And so I have students now who lead it and teach other schools how to do it so it makes sense for the kids. And it's just a beautiful thing when you begin to say, now, wait, what if I own the personal learning plan my way? And we have to be open to the fact that some of us don't write a lot of things down. It's in our head. It's a story, right? Whereas other people are really kinesthetic. Like, I have one kid who made a model of a brain, and inside his brain was his PLP. And it was brilliant. And because then he'd sit and talk about, well, what do I think? What do I believe? What do I want to do? What do I struggle with? What do I need? Those kinds of things. So what we've done is we've really infused this work with purpose. So rather than just a one-off or a thing we do occasionally, it's integrated into a personal learning plan that we teach people to own. And we teach people to say, let's make it easy. Let's make it natural. Let's do the same thing as adults as we do with our kids. So that way we have this bonding thing that says, well, what did you write? This is what I wrote. This is what I'm thinking. You know, this is what I really want to do this, right? And what happens then is that then we go deeper in this work. Now, along the way, once again, we have these moments where kids and adults really need to talk deeper or to go deeper to be able to take things to the next level. We also have a need for kids and adults to learn that mindfulness works. And so what happens is when you struggle with this stuff, you really want to understand that mindfulness is a powerful tool. Learn a couple things that work for you, and now look at your problem or challenge and create a pathway that works for you.
Wonderful. So, Katrina, what we did in the fall of 2024.
The BSI training?
Well, this was the brain spotting in the schools. This was a unique invitation, you know, gathering of, I mean, your community.
Yeah. You know, timing is everything. And I've been more aware of the science. And I keep my thumb on a lot of areas of information coming from the state and budget things. So interestingly, after finally going through the phase one, phase two, and BSI in Arizona with you and Heather, then the state released that brain spotting was recommended for opioid intervention and prevention. So one way to break through in these innovative braided funding streams includes fine-tuning through a clinical lens or a brain spotting lens, the work or the outcomes that can come from having access to brain spotting. And that all really just boils down to raising youth voice in the science that goes with it. And Steve and I can talk about our experiences and our kind of our, what we've observed with that research. And then it comes down to emotion regulation in the most purest, ultimate form. And no talk therapy hits that. It's this somatic approach, believing and authentically practicing that every day this student is a new student. Just like if you're a parent and you see these kids grow an inch overnight, that can happen with their past parts, their processing, what they're kind of tapping into for their expansion work. And that is talking to what Stephen was bringing up with these personal learning plans that are living. Just knowing that these kids grow and the teachers grow and the schools grow, I think will be a start to having health and wellness and belonging be more of a practiced and emotionally attuned, grounded still, than the poster on the wall or the SEL curriculum. A lot of kids come to school or develop these stories of their parents being in jail or the complications of living with poverty and or being very wealthy and also having other family chaos. And it's a story that I hope with brain spotting coming into schools that we can just have it be, this is a new kid every day. This is a different kid, a different classroom every hour, and start to recognize those past parts and how influential they've been on the classroom dynamics and the school culture and the individual's perception of how or why they don't fit in. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. I mean, what I really want to highlight about what all you both are saying is the relational and the experiential aspect of all of this, how somatics, learning about emotional regulation, these are all skills that can be practiced and connected with engagement, with purpose, and with hope. And when you bring all of that together, this is how we get the students engaged. This is how we get the staff engaged. Yeah, I really feel like it's a humanity project.
Yeah.
The hiccups we run into, and I think both Stephen and I in talking before connecting with you, Sheree, is we're curious learners. We're now asking the question, how can we help expand this? Mm-hmm. And where do we go next? And, you know, a lot of the schools in my area are telling me we can't even go on field trips. We don't have money for this, that, and the other. And so I'm pivoting around and having an asset-based community look of having the nonprofit, attracting the hospital foundations or private businesses to keep our momentum going. Because there is no way I'm going to let this beautiful thing drop simply because some state or DPI funding stream is on hold. I believe that this is the most important healing for teachers, for people working in schools, and for kids. Using the word brain spotting, we've learned that there's some hiccups there. People, what is that? Well, I don't do that, or I'm not qualified to do that. And that's okay. Let me meet you there and say, when your eyes are in a place to fully receive the information coming to you from a second grader that isn't able to articulate all the things that happen during summer that were not good, when you can fully kind of take that in and then show them that you see them and you're glad that they're there and you want to help them be safe, that's the connection that what we call brain spotting. But all it is connection and attunement.
So where are we going? Where would you like to go with this project?
Well, you know, I think one of the things that we see is this huge need to be able to get students and staff in a better place as a whole, right? And what we know is the funding streams that we've relied on for years are entangled, and we're looking for a new funding stream, a new way to approach this. What we need help with is for people who might be listening to be able to say, oh, hey, have you thought about this? Or we could do this. And, you know, we know by research, these wraparound services that we provide in schools are super helpful for a lot of kids. In other words, when we think more about not just the state standards, but we think about mental health, we think about their social emotional learning, we think about their experiences or experiential learning that accelerates their growth, we need to think about ways that we can create these in a sustainable, joyful way. And so one of the ways we're approaching it is kind of thinking of it like the old school potluck dinner kind of thing, where it's sort of like, let's come together and do this work. Let's bring what you can, share what you can, but be part of it. And so far, that's sort of giving us sort of the, so we won't lose it, we can create it. But now we need to think about different ways that we can transport students, you know, with some stipends to you know, cover some staff that need that for their families. So that's where we're at.
Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that, Katrina? Where are we going, or where would you like to be going?
Fortunately, the kids, there's already this magical sparkle around the kids who've experienced this, both one-on-one with myself or the school counselor in Curtis Sheen, and those that we've got trained, like Max, the school counselor at North Crawford, some of the admin at North Crawford, special education department at Prairie du Chien, the elementary school counselor at Moscoville, the pupil services director at the city. So here we go. Mm-hmm. It's like we're greasing up the, or, you know, oiling up things and planting seeds. The readiness is there. And really, we need more boots on the ground, more people. A school, it's not okay that a school is tasked with an A to Z list of things. Most schools have very difficulty even staffing to have a person in a classroom. Usually in the day, there's a sub that's popping around to three different classrooms. It's really plugged and patched as best as they can. Mm-hmm. So, like, for example, I'm talking to my people of, what are we doing this year? How are we going? I've already written the grants for as much as we can write grants for. And we'll continue our local trainings at the school, which is under the evidence-based program of Sources of Strength, because that's what the state monies are for, the peer-to-peer suicide prevention. And with that, over last year and hopefully this year, we've included Stephen's alchemy, or his addition of just connecting with the youth and bringing a portable podcast. And when the kids are halfway through their training, we start to introduce that then we'll have our podcast and the microphone set up. It doesn't go anywhere. This is for you to keep. And then I can hand it over to Stephen. But the things that we found in holding space, and for me to have had that training with brain spotting, took it from what can be better or what's going on, and having them just maybe historically respond like they're responding in a classroom, to deep expression, sharing that this is what I'm feeling in my heart right now. This is my gut. And I don't know if I can say this. My gut's so tight, but I want to say it. Lots of authentic selves were starting to creep out, starting to emerge in the light. And I'm committed to continuing my local trainings for the schools. And then where we want to go for next summer is to offer another brain spotting for schools. Now that we've planted that seed, I know that other schools will be interested, and then see what we learn from those that were trained in the summer. with their experiences with kids or themselves to better serve the needs that are coming to them and not feel so drained and, you know, that compassion fatigue that hits. So we will have a regional retreat in February for high school and middle school. I have zero money for that. So I'm going to be turning to the people in my community and businesses to ask if doing good for the local kids is something that they're interested in. And I have high hopes that we'll still pull it off. And that's where Stephen and I and the rest of the leaders from the schools just have a really relaxing and fun day for kids to connect. We include some group brain spotting and start to implement what is hope. How does that look for you? I don't like that I just said the word implement, but we hold space to have curiosity be.
You realize it.
Wonderful. So is there anything that either one of you want to share that I haven't asked? I want to make sure that we got all of our information out here that you wanted to share. Is there anything more you want to share about this project, Stephen, that would be good for our listeners to hear?
Yeah, I think one of the things that it's really important for folks to know is that what gives us hope is that we work with students and staff in a wide range of places. And now the students are coming back and saying, let's do that again. Let's go deeper in that. I have students who took the PLP work and then are writing their own version, a student version, so they can teach other students. And basically, we try to make it open space or open sourced. So we're not holding it and saying, gosh, you have to pay us all this money to do this. Instead, we're saying, come, contribute what you can. And we've got really great things to share. And we have students willing to teach other students. If you go to edvisions.org, if I may, you can connect with us. And we would love to connect with you. And some things we do is we do this thing called the Day of Hope. And it's October 24th. And one of the ways we do it is we try and come up with these free things that you can do as a listener with either yourself, your partner, if you have a classroom or at work in your community, that helps you grow hope. So check it out. It's fun and it's experiential learning thing that you do. And what I want to say in close is thank you for all the people who've been contributing to this work. We have people on the ground. And again, Brandon, and I could just list out all these wonderful people who've done the work. And thank you. And if you want to join us, please do.
Beautiful. Thank you. Is there anything that you would like to share, Katrina?
Well, first, I want it to be clearly known I'm a persistent Polly. And I am going to be very persistent with this because I see it working. As a history of working in polytrauma at the VA and working with complicated people with a wide variety of diagnosis on the East Coast and with Kenny Krieger, here's the thing. This is so transformational for all ages. And when a system or a leader or a funder runs into, well, is it evidence-based or this doctor doesn't recommend that? Okay, I'm going to hold space for that. And I'm going to pivot into my community. So I am gracefully holding space for those discussions within my region. We have your colleagues, Geraldine, Andy, Michelle. Michelle can speak volumes about the work that she's doing in the Northern Illinois and Southeast Wisconsin area in schools. And really what it boils down to is please don't be afraid of this innovation because it's transformational. I see it as being life-saving. And not just suicide, but helping a person become their authentic self and transform and expand. We don't have a lot of jobs in Southwest Wisconsin where people just aspire to continue to live here and think that they're going to work here. People leave. And I'm focused on my voice for hope, like the number four. Myvoiceforhope.com will be releasing the website soon. And my vision with that is working with my partners and my colleagues and the sparkly gems in the schools to help them have funding space in kind donations to support belonging, identifying need. That's a big part of our mental health screening. And then bridging those pieces of somatic work, like accessing care can be in the classroom. Accessing care can be in the playground, on the bus. It may not be the local referral to the counselor only, but it has to be in those relationships day to day.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just want to thank both of you for your, number one, your persistence, your voices for hope, and cutting edge openness to engaging a new way. We need folks like yourselves in there doing that and fighting for the youth. And thank you so much for reaching out to me so that I could be a part of this, and Heather Corbett as well. We see this as a foundational work for the future, for our innovative, creative children that are going to grow up. And our hope is that they're going to be able to share their voice, and they're the change that's coming in the future. So I just want to thank both of you for taking the time to come and share this story. And we will definitely put the information, Stephen, that you shared, and the links and so forth. And if there's any other links, website links, or things you want me to include, please email them to me and I'll make sure that they're in the show notes.
Can I end with a quote from a third grader this last week?
Please do.
You know, a lot of people compete on things. Imagine if everybody around the world could work together. Wow. The oceans would be cleaner. And there'd be a cure for cancer for my grandma. Imagine. So that's where their little sparkles are. And I want to hear them and help them become those leaders that initiate and sustain that magic.
Well, you hear the desire and you hear the longing. And isn't that in all of our hearts in one way or another? Like, we're much freer when we're younger to... It's wonderful that that student was able to voice that. And it moves my heart to hear that. And I hope it moves others' hearts to hear that as well. This is where we got to go. We got to go into the schools with the students, the children. So please help these projects, everyone that's out there. Share this podcast with others that you think could benefit from this so that we can push out this voice for hope. So thank you so much for both of you being with us.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on another uplifting journey on Cherie Lindberg's Elevated Life Academy, Stories of Hope and Healing. If you found resonance or connection with what you've heard today, we encourage you to share this episode and consider becoming a subscriber. Please spread the word so others can live an elevated life.